Blog Talk Radio.
Right, we got a lot of trouble on our mind. That's the one and only Chuck D, Public Enemy, revolutionary music for the revolutionary times. You've reached K Son and Friends, formerly known as K Thompson Live. I'm the son, Citizen Payne. I almost forgot the name of the other show. Not really, but kind of sort of, but not really. I'm Citizen Payne. My boys, Wayne Gilman, Byron Saunders, a legendary newsman, a legendary historian. We got a lot to talk about, right? This is K's Son and Friends. And what we got going on, Brother George Foreman, rest in peace, rest in power to our brother. There's a video circulating on him about on the internet, on the social media, from George Floyd, you know, just messages he would send out. Very positive message telling people, you know, work out and do stuff, but he was just sharing a message of positivity. And that's the first time I heard the brother speak other than what he was asking, what the police were doing and trying to beg for his life, and you see a human being. And so as I sit here with the sound turned down on MSNBC, watching Kevin McCarthy, and the question that appeared on the screen was, do they support chokehold bans? And as you know, some of the Republicans don't support the legislation that's being introduced that supports chokehold bans. Don't know why you wouldn't. Why you wouldn't. I understand in a time of scrapping when you're getting down that you need to do something, but it don't sound right to me. Senator Rand Paul is filing legislation to ban no-knock warrants nationwide. We know that Rand Paul is a racist, part of the Klan. So it's no surprise. A couple other things I want to talk about. What we're going to be talking about a little bit, ask the fellas to weigh in on. You saw the lie that Trump was promoting about the elderly gentleman in Buffalo, the lie that he was promoting that the man flopped. We'll use the NBA term, kind of threw himself back. And obviously it's a lie. We know why Trump lies, because that's what he does. I don't know why the Buffalo Police Department decided to lie about it when it was on tape, but that's what I want to talk about. Part of the issue, which when these guys, when one guy lies, it spoils one apple, spoiling the whole bunch. You heard that? That's the problem that a lot of these police agencies are having. The move to defund the police, NASCAR, NFL getting in on the deal. NASCAR, wow. And the move to get rid of all these Confederate symbols. Let me just say this before I bring the fellas in. I never knew, really never even thought about, that many of these streets or the bases, really, the military bases were named after Confederate soldiers and generals. Never thought about that. Never even considered that Fort Bragg was named after some racist devil. Never thought about that. Just like I never thought about the fact that the Star-Spangled Banner was written by a slave owner. Never thought about that. Now, my point is in saying that to you people here today is that it seems that every time you turn around and you feel a certain way about this country, for me, going to the Giants game was a sweet memory that I have going to my father's and my uncle's over the years since the Giants moved to the stadium. And so singing the Star-Spangled Banner, to me, you know, I'm American. I'm thinking, hey, it's nice. We sing it. We're all there together. And then I find out that the song was written by a slave owner. And some history reports say he was a slave owner one time. He wasn't. He back and forth. You own slaves one time, that's good enough for me. You can't. It's kind of hard to come back from that, as far as I'm concerned. But my point is, at every level of history, the peeling back of another historical onion layer, there seems to be something else that's based in racism, some other thing that tries to give me the middle finger as a black man, just to kind of rub it in a little bit more. yes, we're gonna. You guys are gonna entertain us. All these black guys are gonna entertain us, and you all, you darkies, are gonna stand up and stand at attention while this song plays, even though this song is written by someone who owned slaves and did diabolical, brutal, and savage things to your people. But you darkies will stand up. I'm looking at the image on MSNBC now of the Jersey correction officer who decided to recreate the moment that George Floyd died with his buddy down in South Jersey when black protesters, Black Lives Matter protesters went by. What's wrong with these people? What's wrong with them that there's so much evil and hatred inside of them that they want to do that type of stuff just to kind of twist the knife a little bit? Like I've been saying, sometimes some people just want to fight you. And I grew up, besides the heroes in my household, with the hero of the greatest fighter of all time, Muhammad Ali, who used to say, "We don't get along, so we gots to get it on." Let's go in and bring the fellas in first. Here's Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. Wayne, how you doing this evening?
I'm hanging in there. I see you're fired up, you know, and I don't blame you. I mean, there's a lot to feel upset about. I mean, it's really been, you know, such an emotional upheaval this week. You know, you've had a lot of highs, and God knows we've had a lot of lows. I look back, and I try to evaluate what we've been through. And I see where, just what you were talking about, there's been an awakening on the part of some saying that, you know, we need to change all these cultural images that many of us have just grown to accept and not really knowing, you know, what was going on. And many of these, you know, statues and symbols have been erected in areas in which some of us reside. You don't take the time. But the deal is that our culture is so steeped, when I say our, the American culture is so steeped in racism, you know, and the racist symbols that, you know, yes, these demonstrations have been great. It has been an awakening for a generation who perhaps did not go through this, or they heard their parents go through this. But I just really, really wonder what it's going to take to make the symbolic changes that are needed. That, you know, when you and I walk down the street, that we're not described based on our hue, but our gender or the clothes that we're wearing, you know? I mean, there's a situation, you know, that I was talking to a former colleague of mine earlier today that, you know, you can't teach racism. When you're born, you're not born a racist, but this is something that is ingrained, it's taught, it's instilled. And some people get it and they see it for what it's worth. Some people don't want to own this part of their American heritage if they're white. Some people are still grappling with the idea, well, why must we have all these symbolic changes? Slavery was done away with, you know, years and years ago. But, you know, has it really been eradicated from our system? You know, we just heard yesterday, and it was so deafening, the silence in that Senate hearing room when Floyd's younger brother testified and said, you know, it's rhetorically that the life of a black man is nothing more than $20. And I said to myself, man, I don't think the average person, particularly some of those bigoted senators on the Republican side, you know, there's one that comes to mind, he's from the Midwest, and he's always defending Trump. I just can't imagine all of a sudden there's going to be an about-face, and they're thinking, what is it they're going to try to say that they accept now, and they couldn't, you know, during the entire time of this presidency, you know? When do you realize you wake up and you smell the coffee and you just sort of remove yourself from this despicable human being who's been given an opportunity to run the country and bring it to its knees. You know, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
hear you. We're going to dig into a couple of points you made a little bit earlier. I want to get a little further into, but let's go get Byron's take, the legendary historian Byron Saunders. Byron, how you doing this evening, brother? What's your take on some of the issues that we're going to get into?
Well, as you know, I'm here down in the cesspool of Washington, D.C., where our democracy on display is showing the roots of its racism, showing the roots of its violence, showing the roots of its no caring for people. And make no mistake about it, because today, June 11th, 2020, the United States total from the pandemic is over 105,351 people dead. Infected, 2,060,158. That's our totals, and it's counting. And as of today, they are saying that by September, we will be over 200,000 people dead. The national unemployment totals as of today, June 11, 2020, is over 47 million people. The nation's capital has infected 9,589 people and dead 502 people dead in the nation's capital. The financial capital of the world. That's right, New York City. Infected 205,854. How many dead? 20,895 dead and counting. And I'll repeat it because it needs to be repeated. By September, that the best estimates are now saying we will have over 200,000 people dead.
So we can't afford.
That's right. We can't afford to be playing.
We can't afford to have this guy in office anymore because people are literally dying. He is killing people. That's right. He's standing on bigger streets than Fifth Avenue. And
thank you.
He
built a wall around the people's house, the White House, built by slaves. And on June 19th, he has the audacity and the balls to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to deliver some kind of major speech on race and violence and police and authority. And we all should be remembering and remind him that he stepped on hollow ground, because on June 1st, May 31st to June 1st, this country's worst domestic violence event took place in the community known as Greenwood, Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma, where whites dropped bombs and destroyed the richest black city in America. And he has the audacity to go there and give a major speech and a rally.
Well, that's why all of this guy's stuff, he's a liar and a racist, and all of his stuff is to, like I said, tweak us and give a wink to his base, his racist base. He's a racist, and they're a racist, too. And even though that he acts like and has those house Negroes at the White House and sits down and talk to them, he didn't even meet with the top cops in Houston, the top three ranking black officers in Houston today that he went down there to meet with. He were totally snubbed from this meeting. So he didn't really want to get the real assessment. Hopefully the brothers, I didn't see the footage, but I know that at least a few of the brothers in there let him know what was really going on. But let me just read you a tweet that he sent out today, and I want to jump back into some of the other stuff that we talked about earlier. Here's a tweet that he sent out today talking about when the National Guard went over there and moved the crowds out of it. And this shows you how sick this guy is. It says, "Our great National Guard troops who took care of the area around the White House hardly believed how easy it was. A walk in the park," one said. "The protesters, agitators, anarchists, Antifa in caps and in parentheses, and others were handled very easily by the guard, DC Police and SS, great job. And he's got the Secret Service, S.S. So S.S. And one of the issues was someone said, you know, for obvious reasons, Twitterer minds Trump, SS is bad shorthand for Secret Service. And so this proves, like I said, my mother used to say, and I guess she was prophetic, that he is in fact Hitler, referring to the Secret Service as the SS, and also the fact that this sick individual envisions the protesters as some sort of opposing army, some sort of un-American army, and that the clearing out of them was some sort of battle that he refers to as a walk in the park. This man is sick. Every individual that supports him is sick. And we need to get them out of the country now. Now, I want to go back and talk about the lie he promoted earlier this week about the old man in Buffalo saying he fell harder. I watched the tape. He fell harder. Well, we know, once again, another day of proof of the lying bastard that Trump is, because everybody watching the tape could see that he was an elderly man. He'd lost his balance. He was shoved kind of hard by these guys. And I want to get into the Buffalo police, right? Shoved kind of hard by these guys and fell back, lost his balance because he's elderly. Now, my assessment is when you watch that tape, this is part of the problem. I believe the Buffalo Police Department put out a statement lying, said the guy tripped. Clearly, everybody sees he's shoved to the ground and falls. But also, what you clearly see in my estimation is that those guys, they pushed him, probably shouldn't have pushed or shoved him that hard, but I didn't see a maliciousness in it. I saw them doing their job, saw both of the guys push him, both the guys reacted like, oh, they didn't mean for that to happen that bad, right? But because of what's going on in the entire country right now, one bad apple, even the good ones are getting swept up into this. And when the Buffalo Police Department comes out and lies about what happens, that makes it worse. Just come out and say they shouldn't have shoved them. They shoved them a little bit too hard. But if you look at the tape, you see both the dudes, they felt, I mean, from I'm going by their body language. One dude actually tried to go back when he looked. If you look at him, he kind of was shocked that the guy actually hit his head, tried to bend down to help the dude. It was obviously a ranking officer who told him no, who got on his walkie to try to call up a medic, as you could see that, right? And the other cop, the other guy, he looks down. You see him kind of pause and look back. So these guys, clearly from what I saw from the body language, there was some sort of remorse. Now, I'm not saying that they would have felt that way if it was an old black man. maybe they wouldn't have felt that way. But this is what I'm talking about. We have to be – it's a nuanced thing as we address racism in this country. And both sides, the extreme versions of the media on both sides, they fan the flames sometimes. And so when the jackass of the benevolent head of the New York benevolent police officers thing and talking about it never happens, yeah, it does. And you're the reason why those guys in Buffalo had to lose their job because of racists like you that want to keep the system going that don't address the issues, the times when it does happen. If you're saying it never happens,
you know,
you're a liar.
Go ahead,
Wayne. Jump in.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up. I can only go but so far with what I'm about to tell you because I was in I had an encounter this week that you know, a certain degree of anonymity is required on this part. But I had a long discussion with a friend of mine who's a retired NYPD detective, and you know, and I was telling him that you know, as much as they're, as you cited, they're good ones. And there's some that are swept up because of what's going on. You know, a lot of this has to do with the culture of the union and now, and knowing that they're tied to someone that basically is paid a heck of a lot of money. And you know, and I think that really needs to be brought out because, you know, when it was explained to me, for not so much that there's justification, but the bottom line is that if you're in a situation, as a cop, and I really feel that if you're taking on that responsibility, There are some that I've met that in the course of the 30 years or whatever, how many years they put in, they never had to draw the gun to shoot someone. And then there's some that are obviously trigger happy, and they think that they're still part of this militia or some secret society that they've been empowered to shoot. But what it is, as this guy said to me, the way Donald Trump looks for, he calls out, "Where's my Roy Cohen?" when he's gotten himself into some hot mess and he needs someone to explain their way out of something. And a lot of these union leaders are Roy Cohens. And you just made an example citing Lynch here in New York with the NYPD. I mean, there are things that, obviously the average person sees, but yet for some reason they don't see. And maybe, there's some sort of theatrical experience that they have to go through to make sure that the support of the rank and file stays within lockstep with what their agenda is all about. But we got to do away with this. The city runs the police department, not the union leadership in each municipality. That's the way it should be. I mean, I think that man in Buffalo is bleeding. Our commander in chief says, "Oh, he might have been one of the elements of Antifa." And you're right. A couple of cops in that procession there fell back and wanted to do something about it. But there were some that probably said, "Don't pick him up. Never mind that he hit his head and he's bleeding profusely and he's 75 years old. Doesn't matter." And I find that objectionable.
I definitely think there were some in there, but I'm going by what we saw, and part of the problem is Lynch was standing with the guy. The guy that I'm talking about is I think his name is Mark something, Mara or something, head of the Patrolman's Benevolent Association. So that's separate from apparently from the union, or maybe part of the union. But Lynch too. I've heard him use language that I wouldn't be surprised if he was racist. But you want your union leaders to do that. That's what your union does. I'm not mad at that. That they're strong and they fight for their members. Let me finish my point if
All
I may.
Right. Yeah.
It's just that what happens with union members, and in this particular union, obviously, and this is why I wanted to get back with you on it, the police unions, that's how they obtain the supremacy and the racism with the power structure within that. We know that the racists and the supremacists in a lot of these unions, they're the ones running the unions. And so, your friend might have told you, as a union member, I got to go along with the union support and this asshole who puts us in a bad situation because he's a union member. So when it comes around to me being a situation, I want to get full support of the union. And that puts a lot of the members, obviously, in bad situations, the ones that are the righteous cops, the ones that are trying to do the right thing. And I know back in the day, my mom used to have Ali Al Rockman, who was head of the Guardians or the Black Police Officers Association. There in New York, and you guys would have them on several shows there, Wayne, because of the issues that they were dealing with way back then. So, I mean, if you want to elaborate on that, I just wanted to throw that out real quick, and maybe you want to continue to elaborate and make your point. And if you want to jump in here too, Byron, vis-a-vis as it works in D.C., go ahead, Wayne. Go ahead, Wayne, finish your point.
Just wrapping up, and the thing is that, I'm certain Byron could cite chapter and verse of different instances in which the police department has been victimized, but I really think that they have to look at the culture and the impact the unions have had on all these departments. There's a reason why Pat Lynch, for 5 years, kept saying that Pantaleo, who strangled and was obviously at fault for taking the life of Eric Garner, should still be on the force. And it's the same mindset that the leadership of the union in Minnesota, when they saw Chauvin put his knee down on this guy, he didn't show any remorse, He had time. 8 minutes went by, man. He had time to lift himself up. But yet I guess it took this symbolic outrage The country was fed up like a powder keg because of the pandemic, the series of racial incidents, that enough has become enough. But is it still enough?
Right. But let's just point out real quick, too, that we notice, like I was saying, the supremacists are higher up in the union, because that union boss in Minneapolis was brought up on charges by the current police officer as one of the people who was discriminating against him. You know, that the current chief in Minneapolis was one of several that brought a lawsuit that settled out of court against the department for discriminatory treatment. And this particular individual who was head of the union now was one of the people, I think, that might have been named in that particular incident. Now, Byron, you could give a better, a different perspective as opposed to the Capitol Police versus the D.C. police and how Mayor Bowser will try to use the police.
Yeah.
Why don't you give you – yeah.
Well, here's what we have to be really – pay very close attention to these three things. The use of military weaponry that has been given to police by congressional action. That's policy. Pay very close attention to, especially in Washington, D.C., where we got 17 different kind of polices here. Okay? Y'all don't know about that. This country has no idea what they're looking at. But when you look at that optic and those who had their police badges visible, those military personnel who had their badges visible, and then there was a line, two lines at least, of military personnel who were in black ops operation suits who had no visible
identification.
And when I
who were allegedly supposed to be the police, police.
Right. Be the police now, right? Hey! Because it looks, from that point of view, this kind of authoritarian push that's being given to us. But when you see a little white girl having her eyes flushed with milk as a result of action taken by Seattle Police Force and other optics of white young people getting gassed, that's what tear gas is, gassed, and you see that optics in your front of your White House, I can tell you what's going on, gentlemen, is that you are being a witness to the change and the dynamics and history of this country. It wasn't going to come easy. We knew that. We knew the optics would be ugly. And guess what? It's about to get even uglier. Because when you have an out-of-control narcissist and your military, remember I told you guys this a year ago, military doesn't have an allegiance to the commander-in-chief. They never will. You're taught that in military school. I went to a military academy. And your allegiance is to the Constitution and the flag. And you're seeing and bearing witness, because when the ranks start dissipating in the conglomeration of this so-called authoritarian setup, you have a corruption-based administration that is crumbling. It is.
You mean that nobody? What you mean by that is that it's crumbling because people are not willing to go along with his stuff anymore.
Right.
Like Milley came out today and apologized and said he was wrong. Is that along the lines of what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm so glad he did.
At that point, you're seeing and bearing witness to what I've been telling you. When we surrendered at Appomattox, y'all got to keep remembering the history. Lee surrendered to his classmates from West Point. There is a significance to a military command in this country that most people will never understand or appreciate, because it is based in authoritarian law, but regimented respect of command and who's in charge. And that's when they take that oath. My son just took his oath. He's in the Air Force National Guard. And every time I speak to him, I thank him for his service, because he owns a piece of this country now. These men and women who have taken that pledge take the pledge for the Constitution. And because this individual, I'm telling you, because he better start shaking in his boots, because in the art of war, you eliminate the exits. And he is having his exits eliminated one by one by one. And even the talking heads on media, who I blame for not properly vetting this individual, is now eviscerating him every time they get a chance, because the truth and the optics that is being spoken and seen by the world, not just by this nation, but by the global community, are saying that this democracy is in a very big trouble. And if you just have one more death on the street, not a black person, but a white person, in front of a out-of-control police department, it could happen anywhere because they're all out of control. But as I said, you got the audacity to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma? Come on.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And what you're saying about the world, that's the only thing that's getting people to take pause. And as it happened way back in the civil rights era of when we started seeing films of dogs ripping black people's clothes off and various things like that, that's when the world began to look. And that's, you know, under the spotlight, the magnifying glass of the rest of the world is when a lot of these roaches, I'm talking about the individual Trump and the people that support him, because that's what they are, because they start scattering when the lights come on. If you just look at how they all reacted when the person was, one of the reporters was trying to ask them about, you know, Trump and what happened the day that he had everybody move for the photo op and other stuff, and they all kind of tried to scatter away from the microphone, wouldn't even look at the camera. You know, in the light of day, now that the whole world is watching, they're all trying to save face and not look like they support a complete racist or their party is not racist. So so in that light, and let me just say, too, you know, what happens is, and you guys know, we're all of a certain age to know that each generation has done work to move the issue of our people forward. And I think what happens is that when the young people, a lot of young people come along and say, well, y'all didn't get it done, we need to get it done. That's a lack of understanding, a certain naivete about history. Because if you understand history, you would understand that each generation did what they could do within the parameters. And this is a wall. We're building upward. So the saying that you're standing on people's shoulders is true, because the people that came before you, they did the work. You're just seeing how hard the work is. It's like many of these are young people, I believe, are realizing, as I realize, and I might have mentioned this, I don't know if I mentioned it on the air before, but there was a certain point in my life being around my parents and hearing about the issues of race, and I'm sure you guys did back when you were young as well. But I thought, well, by the time I get old, the world will be decent, it'll be all right. And now here we are, all of these years later, it's not all right. It was a little bit better than when my dad was a young man, than our fathers were young and our grandfathers were young, but it's not all right. And my life in the struggle, my life in the push to gain freedom for our people is that. We all, and it's at a point when you realize this is going to be this has been a lifetime struggle. And I think what a lot of these young people are realizing, I don't want to be dealing with this the rest of my life. But unfortunately, it's been 400 years. So there are a lot of people, I'm sure my father and mother didn't want to deal with this throughout their whole life, as I'm sure our grandparents didn't want to deal with this throughout their whole life, but they did, and they made the best of it, and they tried to put us, the next ones, to come along in a better position to carry the baton forward ever, backward never, put more money on the pile. You know what I'm saying? All those things, because the accumulation of all of us putting our shoulders in against the dam breaks the dam. So, you know, when I hear a lot of these young folks talk about, y'all didn't get it done, it's just now you're seeing how insurmountable, how large that task was. So,
well,
you know,
I kind of
try to caution people when they talk about it, what hasn't been done before, as if everybody's just sitting there taking it.
Well, in all honesty, Eric, I mean, the thing is that you're right. You know, we were doing a lot, but when you live, and I'm not as old as your mom was, but I lived through a lot of what she lived through, and I find it heart-wrenching that we have to go through this again. I remember as a teenager growing up in the 60s and seeing riots in Brooklyn in 64, 66. You know, one particularly in 64 was when a Harlem cop, white police officer, shot and killed a black youth, and it triggered disturbances in Harlem, Bed-Stuy, and in Newark, New Jersey. We know about the history of the 67 riots in Newark and what things, you know, changes were led as a result of that, and people who were out there very active. But you're absolutely correct that we do stand on the shoulders of a lot of people, great people, who wanted to make things better for us. And in many instances, it has happened. But it's certainly painful to see young men and women going out there, and in many instances, when you think this thing would have been past us, that we're still fighting the same fight, that the issues of slavery have transformed from one of race, but socioeconomic. You know, in fact, you know, they were so good at hurling the N-word at a lot of us back in the day. You know, that N-word is used to describe many different nationalities today. And I think that's what's going on, that they realize that many of these people of color outside of the black race are experiencing the same things that we went through, and this is why everybody's is waking up. The world is waking up. You know, this is not something crazy said. And I just think it's important, you know. And the other thing too, and I'm going to take a moment to beg forgiveness to Byron, because last week we talked about the importance of media and what role we played back in the day before social media. And I was just reading a piece this week about the impact. You know, I'm a New York guy. I grew up in New York. My rearing in broadcasting been in that, but you know, there was a lot of different places, ports of call in which the word was gotten out. And you know, Byron had cited P.T. Green, but there were a couple of gentlemen that worked with Green that I didn't realize I'd actually worked with them too. Bob Terry, the Nighthawk, and you know,
We're glad to have those brothers. I want to jump into some other things that are jumping off that I've listed that I want to talk about. You know, I'm talking about the removal. We touched briefly on the removal of a lot of these Confederate symbols, certainly on the bases and things.
Right.
But the NASCAR, you know, I'm looking at how NASCAR, Hollywood, and the NFL are getting involved and seem to be more in tune to our struggle. And I guess the biggest of those three institutions is NASCAR, which is banning Confederate flags. Because y'all know that NASCAR and the Confederate flag are go hand in hand. And the fact that they took that step to ban that flag, that's big to me. That's huge, right?
Oh, yeah.
Eric, let me tell you. When my son turns 12 years old, 11, 12, somewhere back in there, my oldest son. We're living in Atlanta, Georgia, Fayetteville, Georgia, which is close to where the Atlanta Raceway was, or is. Okay, he wanted to go to the Raceway and take a couple of his friends, which we did, and we went to the racetrack, and we went down on the racetrack where they were having the Richard Petty experience, where you pay a couple hundred dollars to ride in a race car around the track at 200 miles an hour. If you got a driver's license, you'll be able to drive with somebody, okay? But you get a chance to do that. Well, we're down in the pits, as they say, with my 12-year-old son and a couple of his buddies, and we're enjoying the heck out of it and realizing that, he has a need for speed. He wants to be a pilot. He's now at the United States Air Force National Guard. However, we took the tour of the Atlanta Motor Speedway, and the guy told us, now get a load of this. They only do four races in the entire 365-year calendar. Coca-Cola is their major sponsor. Four races. And in those four races, they raise more money than the franchises of the Falcons, the Hawks, and the Braves for an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Okay? The dynamics and economics of that, and to have that flag, because I've been to it, and believe me, I've sat out there on the route, whatever it is, going down to the racetrack on that couple days before, because it's like a parade of 18-wheelers that bring the cars into the track. And it's like it's a salute to Yahoo Life, okay? And sure enough, along the way, you got folks waving their Confederate flag. Yahoo, baby!
Yeah, and that's what it is, right? I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's
okay.
So that means they're generating a hell of a lot of money. Now you know why they wear. Now we know why they wear all those patches on their clothes.
Hello. So this is major, but you see the deconstruction, and this is where you have to understand and really respect the civil rights movement. Back in the civil rights movement days, when it was the lunch counter and it was the water fountain and it was the bathroom, they will tell you to a person, if you ever speak to any of those who were with Martin Luther King, SNCC, or any of those older organizations, they will tell you the reason why they chose those places to integrate is because it was the easiest thing for people to understand. If you took away their flag, if you took away their race cars, if you took away all the Yahoo and their statues, they never would have gone for it. But this is huge. If you want to deconstruct the country's racist history, this is how you do it. You retire that flag. I've been saying
absolutely.
It ever since Appomattox, because the military code of surrender is you take the enemy's flag and close it.
That's right.
How many are still in a vacuum with respect to respecting that aspect of it?
That's right.
You know, I mean, how long will it take before they understand that the war is over, that the country is one united front, and that there's no divisiveness between, you know, geographical locations? You know, that's the issue, you know?
Yeah.
And it's good that they're coming out now and the way they say, but still.
I don't think that those of them that never want to understand it, that want to keep it going, they're never going to stop fighting. They haven't stopped fighting for all these years. What we can do, and what you guys have mentioned, is that make it illegal or make that type of behavior unacceptable in the society. And certainly it begins with removing that flag. And also I saw there's a video that my cousin sent me circulating on Instagram about a sister talking about rioting and looting and the concept of people saying, don't burn down your own neighborhood because these stores need to be here. And her vibe was basically, they all need to burn down. If we can't be free, we've been saying that. We've bought into this contract that America, like Dr. King says, keeps not wanting to cash the check and send us back insufficient funds. And so when you take investment in the lifestyle and you buy into what America is selling and saying, you know, we're all equal, yada, yada, you expect to be treated equal under equal justice under the law, right? Equal treatment under the law. And when you don't, then I think probably the strategy in boycotting these businesses, the strategy I want to hear that this young lady was saying in her speech was that, yeah, it all goes down. If we can't all live in peace, then we're all going to go up in flames. But what happens in that, instead of the mom and pops, when you start damaging the big corporations, you start putting the heat on big corporations and their ability to make money, right? That's why the economic boycott, that's why the bus boycott worked, because you hit them in their pocket and you let them know that, and the way you get the corporations involved is you hit them in their pocket. Now it's time to see where they stand. That's why we're seeing all these PSA kind of like commercials. I saw one very long one from McDonald's last night where it was all text, where they were just talking, you know, running down what they felt about the black community and Black Lives Matter. So all of these corporations are beginning to realize, hey, before we get on this blacklist of that blackout that they're talking about, let's position ourselves to show that we are alliances, we are allies in this war with our consumers, you know. So, I mean, to them, they understand. That's why I'm saying you hit them where they understand. They understand economics. You know, it's not about empathy. It's not about when they're going to get it. I mean, some are going to have empathy, but we can't rely on certain individuals to come around. That's why you got to let them know, no, these are going to be the consequences for this behavior, all right? If you continue, police officers, to do this, then, yeah, we'll defund the police department. You don't, we will no longer recognize your authority. And so instead of being the police, the justice, you're just going to be a gang like everybody else, so we're going to arrest you. So when the unions want to come and protect these members, then say we're going to pull the money out. We're not going to hire you guys. So, you know, I think the concept of hitting them in their pocketbooks gets a bigger response as opposed to just appealing to one's moral sensibilities.
Well, I think that there's a need to boycott from that perspective. That level of protestation is considered acceptable as far as I'm concerned. As a small business owner myself, I would take umbrage with all the sweat, work, and crap that I've gone through to erect what little I do have. If somebody came along and said, oh, let's torch this. You know,
of course.
I understand the symbolism involved in bringing down the house and all that, but a lot of people who are, you know, caught up in this madness don't understand the struggles that some of us have gone through just to have what little we do have, and then we have a White House that's supposed to be sending out stimulus packages to people, but they're enriching themselves. You know, under this banner that we're helping, you know, no other president has done more for black people than I have. You know, that kind of nonsense that we have to sit here and swallow. And
you know,
that's the deal. But, you know, I'm into Black Solidarity Day or any day that we could right a wrong without having to destroy, you know, what's erected.
Wayne and Eric, the thing that's my bug right now, you have this clown sitting down in a room filled with nothing but handkerchief head preachers and sellouts, coons.
Yeah.
This guy's been in office for 4 years. It's high time that we begin to call we of the fourth estate, the journalist estate, saying, we don't want to come to any more of your photo op meetings when you're meeting with just those people, because those people don't represent even a half of 1% of the African American community in this nation.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do represent anybody, you couldn't fill an auditorium with those people, because at some point they're falsely giving us their leadership in a room with the so-called leader, and he has yet to speak or talk to in any kind of conscious level with the voted representatives, okay? The African-American, the Hispanic, the Asian caucus. And when you don't have those, I don't want to know another meeting that he's had with these handkerchief heads. As far as I'm concerned, they are wasted people of color. And I want to know who are they following. Because at the point at which when I saw Anderson Cooper and Cornel West, who's been in a lot of trouble with us in and out of the movement, but you can say one thing about his ministry and his theology. It is consistent. And when you have followed a devoted messenger of the Prince of Peace, it's not being easy, because it demands a special type of character to be consistent in delivering his message of peace, not yours. And that's why Reverend Al resonated. That's why Dr. Cornel West resonates, because they made one.
Okay.
You
I'm
know
not
what
a Cornel
I'm
West.
Saying?
I, he hasn't been quite
point,
as. Cornel West has not been quite as vocal as he was during the bottom, as he was during his criticism of Barack Obama.
Eric,
I have not heard him be quite as vocal.
I agree, but I saw something the other night that I didn't anticipate seeing, and it was a moment of spiritual and emotionally given message that both men broke down on air several times. And we have, and I want you to understand, because when Reverend Barber on Oprah the other night, and with Stacey Abrams and Ava DuVernay and all those talking heads that we do respect, you are listening to a spiritual message, a message grounded in the theology of the Prince of Peace message of nonviolence. And that's hard, guys. Look at all these confrontations that they want us to have. We got people showing up at the state capitals with AK-47s because they're pissed off about opening up their states, and they're getting sick right now. You got people protesting in front of the White House and being confronted with by supposedly our army shooting tear gas at them, rubber bullets. That's spiritual, guys. As much as it is political, we are in a spiritual vortex right now. If we do get out of this, it's going to be soul stirring, because right now the forces that are in control are driving us to the edge of hell, and there is no return.
So help me understand. I understand how Cornel West made that all right.
I got to bust on him.
Because I heard the brother very vehemently for 3.5 years. Him and Tavis Smiley was screaming from the hills. Anybody who would listen now, what a horrible job Barack Obama was doing. And Tavis, somebody must have kidnapped him, or he must be in a bunker somewhere. Because I ain't heard a peep out of him about Trump. I've heard Cornell. Let me finish. I've heard Cornell speak a few times about Trump, but certainly not to the extent that I heard him dogging Obama as much as he did. And I just watched him the other night.
Right.
Him and Candace Owens, and he was correcting Candace. They had him on Fox on Laura Ingraham's show. And my father came and saw him here in Jersey, and that's well and good, but come on, bruh. Come on, bro. When there's one brother there, and all you could do is talk about how bad the job that the brothers, even Eric Michael Dyson and all them, pulled back from their criticisms when they all sat at that round table with Tavis at that day. So I don't want to. So Cornell,
right on, Eric.
Brother. Yeah, right on. We're on the same side,
but you was a little shady.
I'm gonna be looking at him funny if we start swinging. That's all I'm saying.
But remember this. Al Sharpton said it so eloquently in the eulogy that he gave a couple nights ago down in Houston. He said, y'all know who I am. Y'all know I show up because y'all think I'm the last person y'all got to call, but I'm there. You may not like what I bring when I get there, but I am there. And the reason why he can make that commentary is because most Christians forget what side of the Christian line they're on. If you're a Baptist, who are you following? You're following John the Baptist. Okay? And in the book that I've read, John the Baptist was a hellraiser. He had his head chopped off, y'all, for the birthday of Bathsheba. Come on, I didn't write this story. It's not
Yeah, that's great, off. That's great. But I understand what you're saying about the Christianity and all that. There's a whole bunch of Muslim people and all that, and that religion. Jesus was a black man, and that's whatever that dude, that picture that that's talking about, that's all well and great. I understand the spiritual aspect. But you have a lot of these people, so-called Christians, that are just as hateful. Wayne, I wanted to talk to you because you can get the best assessment about Reverend Al and his evolution into.
Well, I have to say, I've known Al 40-some-odd years now, and I was there in the beginning, and, I remember a time when we were given instructions not to have him on the air. And I have to say, this week, I was reflecting on all that, and I am proud of the several reincarnations he's gone through. There are times when I vehemently disagree with him. There are times when I've taken a bullet for him. I remember about a year ago, the New York Times had called me at home. Somebody had given him my number, and they wanted to review some archival material that I had with Al going back in the day, you know, at the radio station. But the, at the end of the day, I realized this was about, you know, an expose, a tell-all to basically expose whatever it is that they feel that they can come up with because Al was becoming too powerful. But I have to say, in moments like this and what we're going through, you know, we need a voice. You talk about Tavis Smiley, and I really thought that was unconscionable on his part. But we did not know that Tavis Smiley at the time was also in lockstep with his personal life, like Charlie Rose and all
yeah.
those others who, you know, were basically brought out of the closet for clandestine activity that they've done with either people they worked with or people, you know. That, you know, there's always some reckoning that goes on. And I'm not saying this to, you know, basically disparage Smiley, but it is what it is. So he's quiet now. He's got nowhere to go, at least from what we see. But, you know, it is interesting. I mean, I'm a little taken back from time to time when I see our brother, the bespeckled professor, you know, from not Princeton. God, where is you know, you just called his name. I'm having a senior moment at the
you're
moment,
about
but
the Cornell West,
Harvard.
Cornell, yeah, Cornell. But you know,
Harvard,
it you know
yeah.
the deal.
Yeah,
coming in.
He's at Harvard now. Yeah.
Yeah, he's at Harvard.
Yeah, I'm thinking Princeton.
But he was
at
Princeton
Harvard.
Before, I believe. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that there's a wealth of history there, and there are times when I see him and he gets on, and the deal is he has to walk a thin line. But we also have to bring in this reality check that our people are going through pain. We're struggling, and in spite of all, you know, what you'd like to do and show. A certain amount of understanding and sympathy, not sympathy, but empathy, I guess, for the other side. You know, but it is what it is. And hopefully,
we're not a monolithic group. I mean, it shows that we're not a monolithic group as African Americans. But a point that you made earlier that I want to go back to as we go into the final about 2 minutes. Was the fact that Trump only meets with black people that agree with him. This is the out that a lot of these Republicans and all of these people that want to cite, oh, black people love us and all this other jackass stuff that they say. They find the ones that agree with them, right? I mean, obviously
yeah.
black Republicans, black conservatives are a small minority of the whole. They're not interested in really getting an assessment of how black people feel. They just cherry-pick the black people that agree with them. And this is the whole thing, and that's part of the trick game that a lot of these African-American individuals come up with, because they try to say, like someone like Candace Owens, I'm speaking for the black community and the Democratic Party. No, you're not. You're speaking for a very small percentage of black people that does not represent the majority of black people, but what the Republicans and Trump types, of course they pick the ones that agree with them. So they can say we have some black supporters, and the ones that do that are obviously, of course, sellouts. As I like to refer to them. I don't know what y'all like
price.
To call them.
At a price. You're absolutely right.
Sellout, right. They're sellouts. So that's what they're involved in. I think it was finally as we go, we've got a minute 37. Drew Brees, I got to give him his props. I was dissing him before.
Came back
I don't know
home.
How you guys.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Byron.
He came back to the line. He came back to the line of scrimmage and realized the person who was snapping him the ball is.
And them guys that's going to be trying to tackle him in practice,
right,
a whole
there,
bunch of big
okay?
black dudes, right?
Thank you.
Oh.
Okay.
You're saying
it
he
is.
Was influenced that way? Okay.
He was influenced by it.
Getting ready to be full contact in practice. Get ready to be full contact in practice. He thought twice about that. All right, we got to go. Give the people your sign-off, Byron.
Well, here, I got to tell y'all next week. June 19th, that's Juneteenth, June 19th at 8 p.m., Facebook Live, Instagram Live. You know my show that I directed starring Mzuri Moyo Mbaye? The Fannie Lou Hammer story directed by me is coming to Facebook Live and Instagram Live June 19th,
gotta go. Okay.
2020, 8 p.m., and it's opening, and the
There it is. Got to go by. All right. There it is, June 19th. Byron Saunders. Thank you, brother. Wayne Gilman, next. Wayne, say goodbye to the people.
Hey, keep
Hope
alive. And we got to extend this another hour soon.
Yep, we could do another hour. All right, Wayne, talk to you later, brother. 10 seconds. This has been Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Kay's Son. Those are the friends. Byron Saunders, Wayne Gilman. Thursday evening on Blog Talk. But we're here often, different times, sometimes Wednesdays. We're going to do another episode because the brothers still want to talk about some more stuff. But we'll talk to you again soon. K. Thompson Live, K. Son of Friends. The power struggle continues. Revolutionary music for revolutionary times.